Look, Matt.
Where?
Oh, I see.
Wow. Oh, my.
Oh, and look over there.
Wow, is that Ooh. Culture?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Las Culturistas.
Ding dong! Las Culturistas calling!
Merry Christmas, Beau.
Merry Christmas, Matt. And Merry Christmas to our readers if you celebrate. It's Christmas Day.
Yes, Merry Christmas to all the readers who celebrate. And to everyone who doesn't celebrate, happy holidays. And to everyone who doesn't give a fuck about any of that, hey girl, whatever. Yes, yes.
Yes, and this is, no matter what you celebrate, day 12, the 12 days of culture.
Let's celebrate that.
Did this kind of roll out the way you expected it to? I was very surprised.
To be honest with you, it came out even better than I ever could have dreamed. And I think it was, whose idea was it to do it? Was it very much a joint thing?
It was a joint thing. Like, I was like, let's do a 12 days of something. And then you were like, 12 days of culture. And then we were like, what does that mean? And then we were like, let's, and then you were the one who was like, let's pick out dates from history that have contributed gifts.
Sometimes when we make decisions together,
oh, Hans says, wow, erasure.
Did Hans come up with this? Check the receipts, Hans says. Okay, we have a straight man who's sort of trying to take credit for our creativity. Interesting. I was going to say that oftentimes whenever we make creative decisions together, I literally immediately forget who thought of it.
But isn't that beautiful that it doesn't matter?
Yes, it is.
Because I don't think in those terms.
I don't care about credit at all.
When I do get possessive about that kind of thing, it's usually when I'm like in a bad place with it, when I feel weirdly about what the work is. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, I guess like, yeah, for sure. Like, but for me, it's like I would never get irritated about something like that unless someone was literally going out of their way to be like, I came up with this, I thought of this, and sure. I was involved equally. I'd be like, well, that's not true. Why are you saying that? But I feel like...
Especially if they're trying to make money. I'm trying to make a buck off of me.
And I will get my lawyers. I will get my lawyers, Seth and Isaac, and they will kill you. They are silent killers, okay? My lawyers are silent killers. And you know what? Bowen has the same lawyers. And they're silent killers. So back off.
What if you and I were to be against each other in a lawsuit?
In a legal moment?
In a legal dispute.
Honestly, Hans says check text. Guess what? We've moved on.
Hans is going to sue us, I guess. Well, Hans, Seth and Isaac will kill you.
In the words of Taylor Swift, get a good lawyer because you're going to need one because our lawyers are silent killers. Sent you the receipts, Hans says. What the fuck? All right, what is he saying?
What is he talking about?
Let's just look.
He sent us these screenshots.
Oh my God.
Here we go.
He says,
Can you make it 3 Christmas episodes or about the 12 days of culture?
Or about the 12 days of culture. And then I said, honestly, 12 days of culture is very funny. So? Oh, okay.
Hans,
so I
hot,
guess
hot head of content, Hans. We're eating crow, as they
we're
say.
We're gonna. I hate eating crow. It's the worst.
My least favorite food. My least favorite poultry.
It's such a gamey bird. But we're gonna have to damn bird apologize to I guess Ms. Hans who threw a fit just now in the chat. A fit.
Why can't you be more like us when we say it doesn't? We don't really care about who takes credit.
I keep telling Hans to be more like us. I really do. Namely, a gay man, so we can kiss him. Anyway, let's just say that this is the final day of culture. And why do you ask about the way it panned out? Were you pleasantly surprised as well and thrilled even?
I was going to say, like, I really didn't know what to expect. I just liked, because, reader, we're going to let you in on some BTS.
Oh.
Top 200 moments in culture history, a true joy.
It was so fun.
So fun. But the way it came together was a flurry of just like, boom, 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 just like true, like, and in many ways that is like ideal. That's like what I want every creative process to be like.
Yeah.
Just to be free flowing and have it not matter. But I kind of liked that, not that 12 Days of Culture wasn't free flowing. And that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying I liked that we had the space and the air to really think about what dates we were going to commit to for the 12 Days of Culture.
Right. And also, it's kind of become this thing, too, with the podcast at large, where obviously the pandemic has had us re-examine how we do the podcast, and we've really liked doing more episodes just together.
Yes.
And we've also talked about maybe going forward, that we will do more episodes like this that sort of examine a random thing and feel pointed, which is literally actually how the podcast started.
That's right. That's very true. We're just going back to our roots.
It was going to be every episode was about a certain cultural institution, and we like really went into it. That's why our first episode is called The Grammys. And I think
The Grammys.
The second episode with Anna Dresden is called American Idol. And I don't think we talked about it at all because she got there and she was like, I don't watch it. And we're like, okay, cool. Well, you know, it won't really matter. But yeah,
it was still perfect.
You always go back home.
Yes. And so that's all I wanted to do was just kind of get your gauge on what the 12 days were to you. I really enjoyed this a great deal.
They've been my favorite. They've been my favorite of the year besides the top 200 days. And of course, when Will Ferrell, our producer, came.
But I'm going to make a controversial statement and say that they're, uh-oh, I'm putting them on equal footing. 12 days and top 200.
Wow.
Different things to get out of both of them, but both equally valuable. If you, whatever your, you know, meaning of value.
Whatever your persuasion, and things change, but you know, the 12 days of culture were a blast and I had so much fun. And this actually is today, and you pitched this, and I was really, really excited about this because I think it's form breaking. And we just came off an episode yesterday, yes, where we didn't even say a date because it's an unknown date.
But this actually,
it looks ahead in such a beautiful way. And you said something so stunning about it. You said something stunning.
Well, before I say that, I don't really remember what I said that was so stunning, but I do want to say that this was another collaborative moment because my sister, Matt Rogers, sent me a video of Shigeru Miyamoto.
Yes.
Walking through this land.
Yes.
And going, you have to watch this. I watched it. I go, oh my God, I cannot believe this. I've never been so excited.
And this led into the stunning thing you said.
I said, this has to be the 12th day of culture.
Yes.
It's a beautiful intersection of our interests individually and as a duo. It's theme park culture, it's video game culture intersecting, and the day of culture is, as of this recording, in the future.
It looks ahead, and that is a statement, and we are making a statement. It's so unbelievable.
We've done is look back on these episodes, but we're here to say there is culture ahead. There's culture to look forward to, not as all pulled back from the tide of the past.
I'm crying so hard. I've never been this emotional in years. I'm crying so hard. I can barely control myself. Look how much I'm crying. I'm crying and crying. I'm weeping, really.
A great deal.
This is going to be definitely one of the most anticipated things of my life.
And of mine.
And that's what makes it special.
And if Miyamoto's, oh my God, we have to talk about this.
So this is the deal.
On the 12th day of culture, it was
February 4th, 2021.
Down the pipe into Super Nintendo World. They made it a theme park, y'all. They made Nintendo a theme park.
Girl, if you haven't seen the video of Miyamoto, the man behind some of the greatest video games of all time.
Name another legend.
Walking into this theme park in Universal Studios in Japan and showing you the functions of the bracelet that you can use to tap blocks to get coins.
Mama.
To go into Bowser's castle, into Peach's castle, to go get a meal. And to have a lot of little toads in the kitchen making food, screaming. So cute.
Girl, wait, let's literally break it down.
Okay,
so
this
is, yes, a theme park land in Universal Studios Japan, which is coming to Universal Studios Hollywood and Universal Studios Orlando at some point. But if you are a Mario person, a video game person, a Nintendo person at all, and like are interested in that world actualized, girl, this video shows him walking in and you look up at like the landscape, like you're basically in it, like
a video game.
You see like that mountain, and at the top there's a flagpole. Yoshi's in the distance, all the little Yoshis are popping around, the blocks are everywhere. It's, you walk in allegedly, and it's truly, even beyond Wizarding World of Harry Potter, what they did with theme parks with that, this feels more immersive. It's Crazy, because it's to scale.
J.K. Rowling found dead.
Found dead and gone. Sorry we even brought her up. When you mentioned the wristbands, like you can buy a wristband, of course. You got to buy it.
Of course.
But you basically hit a block. Don't know how that's going to work with COVID, but that's what you do. You hit a block and you get coins on your wristband that I think you can sort of trade in for a prize later. It's like an active amusement park, theme park land that is Nintendo.
Ugh.
Genius.
I mean, they came in with a New Yorker interview this week with him talking about how like this is like the culmination of like all of his work. It's beautiful. And he is truly like known as like one of like the nicest people in the industry. He like everyone like sort of like rags on Nintendo for being like for kids and stuff and that the games aren't violent and all that stuff. But like his whole philosophy around like making video games and making these immersive interactive experiences is that it's like, it should be that it should encourage the idea that the world should be a kinder place. That's literally like verbatim, like what he is saying in this interview. Everyone should check it out in the New Yorker.
And also even Bowser is funny.
Bowser, I mean, you play some of the video games, some like the non-mainline Mario games, and it's like Bowser is a sympathetic character. Like everyone, yeah. Like no one is like truly fully evil. And it's like, I don't know. I mean, Nintendo games like have really raised us all in a way.
Absolutely.
Any, there's so many games. There's guaranteed there's a Nintendo game unless you're a full fanatic. There's a Nintendo game that you haven't played that yet that you should. I just bought Matt Rotter's a Nintendo Switch. I'm encouraging
him
to play the classics.
Yes.
He should play the classics. He should play, they have the Mario 3D All-Stars where it's Mario 64, Super Mario Sunshine, and Super Mario Galaxy, which is my favorite of those
three.
Which
is the one you talked about the other day with Rosalina Slane.
Yeah, with Rosalina, yes.
Oh my God.
You have to play.
I'm going to be crying harder than I am now, which is hard.
Harder that you are crying very hard now, but you will cry harder. But you have to play Breath of the Wild. Readers, if you have played Breath of the Wild, you must beautifully bully Matt Rotters into playing Breath of the Wild, one of the best video games ever made. And this is all Nintendo. This is all Miyamoto. This is all him. Like he's responsible for like Ocarina of Time and for like, you know, like all of these things. Like, oh, he's truly like one of the most like virtuosic people who has ever lived. I'm telling you.
Yes.
He's
a genius. He is a visionary. Let's just say that. I mean,
I take it back. Picasso, fuck Picasso. He's a true, like no one else has done what he has done with video games. Okay.
Yeah, he is a visionary for sure. And also I love the worlds that he creates. And as a kid, I always loved the humor and I always really appreciated the humor. And I actually, you have to flip through the dialogue, I always loved it. I was that kid when I would fall on the ground, I would say that's smart. I would say, ouch, that's smart. Because like I think Bowser said that one time in like Mario Party, and I used to say rubbish. I used to use the word rubbish because of that in Harry Potter. Like, trust me, like these
gamer
were
girl.
It's true, they did raise me in a way, and honestly it's like an influence. But that Donkey Kong, you don't know this, but I did play Zelda when I was a kid because I was so obsessed with the Nintendo culture. Outside of that, I mean, Mario Kart is your standard forever. And let's just say, to jump off that really quick, you know that the main ride in Super Nintendo Land
is
Mario Kart Bowser's Challenge. It's called Koopa's Challenge in Japan because that's what Bowser is called in Japan, Koopa.
That's right.
But literally, it's a state-of-the-art, I'm so excited. State-of-the-art dark ride, which is basically, if you can picture like what Cars is when it goes inside, it's like the Haunted Mansion, that's a dark ride. Harry Potter and the Forbidden Journey, that's a dark ride. Any ride that's indoors, yes.
But isn't that perfect? Because Bowser's Castle in all the Mario Kart games is a dark ride.
So the scenes are the different levels. So basically it starts out at Bowser's Castle on the outside. The entrance to the ride is a huge Bowser's Castle. And then you go in up this huge staircase and you see this big Bowser there. You walk past all the cups, like the Star Cup, the Mushroom Cup, all those things. And then you get on and it's sort of like it's a racing ride. So there's two cars going at the same time and you wear augmented reality glasses, not 3D glasses, augmented reality like on Instagram, what Instagram filter yes. uses. So you wear those, and that's how the animations pop up throughout. So because this is true, we probably can't even get videos of what it looks like because no videos are going to be able to get...
Because the cameras can't get into the damn
yes.
eye.
So it's going to be new for everyone when they do it. And wow. every... Yes. So every scene is a level, and of course it ends at Rainbow Road. And I'm telling you, this is going to be... I mean, the... What theme park rides have been able to do in terms of immersion, like if you ever go to Universal or Disney, like the newer shit, it's truly wild.
It's amazing.
I know it's like tacky because they're huge corporations and we joke about it all the time, but like it is fun as fuck. And we have never seen, I don't think, like a meeting of theme park ride and just concept in terms of what's already out there in media meet than Mario Kart the ride. I mean, who doesn't want to literally play Mario Kart? It's genius. It's going to be psycho.
I cannot wait. And I would love to go to the experience anywhere in the world. Japan,
babe, I would be like, Hollywood, here's the thing. When COVID Florida. Clears up, because I've been saying I wanted to go to Asia anyway, but like, I would flat out go to Universal Studios Japan because they also have, they still, they're the last theme park Universal that has the original.
Back to the Future?
No, they have the original Jaws ride.
Oh, Jaws.
So, I mean, that just to do that one more time would be such a cultural moment in my life because I am that big of a nerd. I want everyone to understand that is as deep as it goes for any human being is the theme park shit. I have these videos that I watch on YouTube. You guys would not believe the shit that I spend my
the
time
history.
On. Like, I watch this thing, Defunct Land, which is about all the old rides. That's really fun. But then I watch, like, daily construction videos. Like, I am all up to date on what's happening, like, across the globe in theme parks. It's a really weird hobby that I'm being vulnerable about in sharing right now, darling dears.
We all accept this. You can feel vulnerable, but
I follow this Twitter called @BioReconstruct, which is literally that. It's like them posting about like what the progress is on the Velocicoaster in Universal Studios, which is the big Jurassic World roller coaster that's coming out next year, which looks also absolutely insane.
What are you so excited about coming up besides Super Nintendo?
Oh my God, Tron coming to the Magic Kingdom. I mean, you've also done Tron. You did it in Disney in China.
And
was it Hong Kong? Shanghai?
Shanghai.
But
incredible.
I mean, that's going to be very exciting. Also, the Guardians of the Galaxy roller coaster they're putting in Epcot. It's like a huge building. It's like a launched family coaster. I don't know what that means, but it said it's apparently going to be the quote unquote most advanced storytelling coaster in the world. Like that it's going to be like have like dark ride story elements, but be a legit roller coaster. So there's a lot of cool stuff happening. It's just on pause.
Of course, but... It'll be there once the doors open again, once the magic is brought back.
Yes. So phase two of the Super Nintendo World project is a Donkey Kong roller coaster, which for me is like that hits my prostate hard because I was really a Donkey Kong kid.
Oh, so you're going to be rolling down a damn barrel,
baby,
on a loose railroad.
Baby, watch me plummet.
Suspended in midair.
Oh, watch me. And by the way, the roller coaster is supposed to jump the rails. So that's a thing.
Oh,
like the Donkey Kong things do. Girl, they have the technology to at least make it look like that's what's happening.
Oh my God. Whatever they do with Zelda, once that ride comes out, I will cry.
I've seen some concept art that's like a theater in the round show where the seats move around in like a 360 fashion and they can go up and below each other that all center around a show that's happening in the center of the stage and it's themed to Zelda. So like...
It's like Carousel of Progress?
No. Well, yes, but... The seats actually
fun.
Go around each other and like it's like a... I'm not, it's like a three-dimensional, almost like theater in the round show.
Like one group of seats will go this way and then the other will go
under
this
it.
Way?
Yeah, yeah. So basically
it can
in a circle switch its arrangement or like your POV.
I bet you it'll be like a time travel component or like light world, dark world thing that like Zelda always does. Oh, that'll be one to go see.
That's just the rumor I heard for that one. And then, of course, by proxy of all this, they also own Pokemon. So there's probably going to be a Pokemon thing put into the theme parks as well once they can get their footing and put the money into it. But yeah, lots of stuff. And also, I was a crazy Pokemon kid.
You and I have not talked enough about Pokemon. You have a slumbering gamer in you.
Deeply. Like when my mother would punish me, when she would come in and say, "You're punished." It was because I was like late to dinner because of video games, and she would always take video games away. It was always what I lost for 2 days when I was being bad.
Oh my God.
Because I was addicted to it. You're punished. You know what? Ah. You're punished.
Pokemon's a thing though that I think they can either nail, or it's a binary thing. They can either nail it or they can fuck it up really badly and like have it fully not realize the potential of the franchise.
Or just look stupid. Like the thing is, like, you should put money into the audio animatronics of it all for those things to like, imagine like, I don't know, like a Majestic Birds thing. You know what I would love? A concept of a ride, which is like, you have to go like capture the Majestic Birds. And like, that was like the thing, because birds absolutely rock.
And birds rock.
And also there's something really intriguing to me about the fact that no one can catch them. Like, I loved that about the Pokemon lore when I was like playing them, that no one owned them. And I was very into the cards. One time I lost my Pokemon cards and I was depressed for 8 months. And then we found them in a closet. Insane.
The cards were a moment. Cards were definitely a moment. Did you keep those little counters, those counter beads? Because it was mostly a collector's thing. Because there were very few people who would actually play you in a Pokemon.
Well, no, I never played. I obviously, like, the competitive thing about it to me was the trading of it all. Like, I would get into legit fights with kids at school. And one time I got into a bad fight with my cousin Michael because I had two Venusaurs and he had a Blastoise. And I was like, he had one Blastoise. And I was like, if I give you my Venusaur, can I get your Blastoise? And he did it. And then my aunt called me later because he had been crying because he made a huge mistake and a bad trade. And I was like, he did make a bad trade, but we did it. And we said no trade backs or no take backs or whatever. And I was just like thinking the other day, what an insane thing that was. Like, it was a verbal contract. And Elaine.
And you were abiding. Can I say, I'm going to say, the most beautiful holographic card, and it's not what you think it is.
I would love Charizard. To hear this.
Charizard was not an aesthetically beautiful card.
No, honestly, it is the most iconic, but it's not the most beautiful.
It's not the most beautiful. Like the 120 HP was like there to like punch you in the face and be like, "Hey, bitch, I have 120 HP."
The power and the rarity of it all, and the novelty, yes.
But the most beautiful, beautiful holographic card was, in fact, the Blastoise.
It was such a gorgeous color, blue, silver,
deep
like
blue. Yes, yeah, Heart of the Ocean vibes.
Yeah, it was really, really great. You know what I always like thought was a striking card was the Zapdos. I was like, this one really gets it across. Like, you are this. Like, you are an electrical bird. We stan.
Electrical bird. Well, first of all, I'm looking at on eBay. Blastoise is going for $500. Zapdos is going for $140, unfortunately.
I would get a Charizard, a Blastoise, and a Venusaur, and I would frame that in my house and put it on the goddamn wall.
Like in your current home?
Yes, I would do that. That's sort of what's starting to happen right now with my aesthetic anyways. I've just thrown any old thing on the wall.
I know.
Because I do not have taste, but I would put that on the wall. It to me is a conversation piece.
I know what to get you for Christmas.
Girl.
It's a conversation piece. I know what to get you for next year's Christmas.
Damn. Darling, remember? Dear. So this is sort of getting into Pokemon culture, but I do have a crazy question that I have to ask you, which is this. Did you have Pokemon red or blue?
I had blue.
Okay. I had red. Interesting difference between us.
Red was top, blue was bottom.
Interesting. I believe that to be true, which is, of course, how we always sort of, that's very Matt and Bo.
That's the binary.
But what would you choose as your starter? Would you choose a Squirtle? Would you choose a Bulbasaur or would you choose a Charmander?
I did not make this rule until much later. I had multiple playthroughs of blue. First playthrough, I decided to go with Charmander.
Interesting.
Struggle through those first few gyms.
Yeah, really hard in the beginning, which is why I never pick it.
First three gyms, Charmander did nothing against rock, nothing against water, nothing against electric.
Mm-hmm.
Brock, Misty, Lieutenant Surge. Lieutenant Surge, who, by the way, hot.
Oh, yeah.
But then...
Daddy.
And Brock too. Misty even.
I mean, Misty was hot. Brock and Misty, the tension was really thick. And honestly, it was very Harry, Ron, Hermione, where you kind of knew that it was, Harry was not it. It was very the Ron and Hermione sexual moment.
But listen, I think canonically in the anime slash manga, Misty and Ash were supposed to end up, the romance was between Misty and Ash. I think Brock, a lot of people have projected like some queerness onto, which I don't mind. I won't refuse.
I love that, actually. Ash seems the gayest to me, but anyway, you go.
Well, then I was just going to say that since then on my playthroughs, I've always chosen, usually I've always chosen the water type. So I did play with Squirtle. Pokemon Silver, I chose Chikorita. Then I restarted and chose Cyndaquil. And then I restarted again and chose, like, Silver is regarded as maybe the best of the games. Mm-hmm. And I kind of am inclined to agree because you were able to go to multiple lands and get a total of 16 badges.
Yeah.
But I played all three of the starters in Silver. But I'm sorry, to answer your original question, I started with Charmander and then on another playthrough had Squirtle.
So I always was gravitating towards Squirtle first in the beginning. And I did obviously
the cutest. I beat
the game very successfully with Blastoise's like as my number one. Mm-hmm. Then I had maybe my most successful game at that point with the Venusaur. Venusaur gets insanely good towards the end. But yes. I'll tell you this, I don't know how this happened, but my most memorable playthrough of Pokemon Red, the time I remember having the most fun with it, because I just crushed. Guess what my number one like chief attack Pokemon was? Number one in my roster.
Arbok.
It was Primeape.
Primeape.
I was that is top killing energy. And I was obviously fucking holes because I was just Primeape. I don't know what it was. I was being such a top. I was a little top punching.
You were a little top. Meanwhile, I was over here with my Wigglytuff doing Thundershock on all of these little whores.
I live for you, Queen.
Wigglytuff and Clefable, you could not tell. I couldn't have enough moonstones, honey. Put them on the Jigglypuff and the Clefairy.
It is peak Bowen Yang to beat the game of Pokemon with a Wigglytuff. That or a Clefable. That, as they say, rocks.
The three from first gen, Clefable, Wigglytuff,
girl,
Chansey. Your pink tanks. Your pink heavy tanks who could learn multiple types of moves. Lilith Fair, multitudinous girls who studied, who were able to razor leaf.
Call me Dr. Chansey.
Call me Dr. Chansey.
Dr. Clefable.
4 degrees.
They all have 4 degrees.
4 degrees.
I'm like coming in there like, fuck yeah, dude. Let's fucking fight, dude. I am giving you Primeape.
Primeape. Who else did you have? Do you remember?
Oh my God. I fucked it up with a Charizard once. I fucked it up. Three beginning types, I would just build them so strong that they were just monsters at the end. So it was usually them. But I'm telling you, the outlier, I got a Mankey at some point, and then it turned and ended up turning into a Primeape. And I was just like, this girl is going to take me all the way. And she did, girl. The Hall of Fame.
She with her metal bracelets. She had jewelry.
She had jewelry. But to bring it back to Mario for a second, another Mario game that I was obsessed with was the Mario RPG on Super Nintendo.
Yes.
Yeah, oh, my RPG. God. Iconic. Incredible Iconic. Storytelling. I never beat it. I always got to the end with that huge beast, the like cloud or whatever, fighting. And I was just like, I can never beat this. I always got to the end.
You need to play RPGs more.
You're probably right.
Guess what? You are a fucking whore for storytelling.
I mean, you're right.
You would love some of these games. Oh my God.
Maybe this is the year. Maybe that's one of my resolutions, is this is going to be the year that I sort of dive into the RPG of it all. Like,
you're missing. It's truly like, I feel like Bong Joon-ho telling people.
I feel you're disappointed in me sometimes.
I'm not disappointed in you. I just feel like Bong Joon-ho telling people to like watch movies with subtitles. I'm like, play some of these video games, y'all. Like, those stories you're missing out on.
Shit.
Ooh. And didn't they tell you in dramatic writing too? Like at NYU at the time?
They really didn't.
They didn't?
Nope.
I thought like a lot of screenwriting programs at the time were just like, guys, like the next frontier is video games. And
that
like,
is not something I recollect. No.
Really? Okay, because.
But they're right. Yeah.
I'm playing a lot of catch up. I'm playing some old quote unquote stuff. Like I'm playing The Last of Us for the first time. Still, it's taking me months, but it's like incredible storytelling. It feels like it's, oh my God, Matt, it's like Eric Gerson. I remember on the way back from the Story Pirates show was like, it's the Citizen Kane of games. He was like, this storytelling. Anyway, it was a very Eric Gerson, like, we love him to death. We love him to death.
I mean, well, he gets all this stuff. Like,
he gets all this stuff. He can give you some guidance.
He gets, like, what I mean by gets all this stuff is he gets the stuff the podcast talks about. One of my favorite straight men I've ever met.
Oh, we love Eric
and
Gerson.
And a talent,
so
capital damn T.
A talent. Sissy's baby.
Here's the fucking deal. I could talk about this for hours, and we may have to this might be a sort of like true
launching
like peak. It we're ending this year because this is the last episode of the year on the highest point, which is a realization that the 12th Day of Culture was this Super Nintendo world coming to us because of what it meant to each of us.
Yes.
And honestly, the shop talk we just did about Pokemon gameplay, mama, that is a world uncovered.
If you didn't hit pause or open up a YouTube app or something else in the middle of that conversation, thank you for sticking with us.
I think it's going to touch some girls. I think some girls are going to feel very touched.
So.
And I think I'm going to see some girls pop in Pokemon Red or Blue. I think I'm going to see some girls who maybe get the step in terms of revisiting,
you know,
the all the dolls, the Ash, Blastoise, Tarizard.
If you want to revisit that, you download Pokemon Let's Go Eevee or Let's Go Pikachu, because it's just Pokemon Red and Blue, but remade into 3D. Anyway, we're done talking about this. Reader, thank you so much for embarking on this journey with us.
What a year.
What a year.
We love you guys to the depths. I mean, this was, feel that this was our favorite year collectively, all episodes taken into account of Las Culturistas. This was our favorite year of doing it, which is crazy, but we felt like every episode we had fun. And let's just talk about iHeart. Let's just talk about all of our incredible people there. I mean, Anna, let's give it up for Anna.
Anna, we love you. Give it up for Anna.
Hot engineer Doug.
Doug, hot engineer Doug.
We have hot producer Anna, hot engineer Doug.
Doug, I was going to call him out for, you know, not caring for, you know, some of our favorite vocalists, but no.
And then, of course, we have hot head of content, Hans. Let's just
give it up. Who came up with the idea for 12 Days of Culture?
And he and that straight man needs credit. And we give him the credit.
And
of course, the Big Money Players Network, Will Ferrell, you are our Father God.
Father God. We love you, Will Ferrell.
We love you. And of course, my sister.
My sister, of course, my sister.
My joy.
My joy. I love you more and more each year.
Well, thank
God. This is a friendship that has endless, endless, endless depths to it.
Oh, well.
I'm so happy to see you every week.
Yeah, each and every week. And to now find out that there's still places to go, which is niche Pokemon gameplay speak. You always learn when you're talking to a friend. You always learn when you're talking to a friend. You always learn when you're talking to a friend. You always learn when you're talking to a friend.
And that's how we ended. I don't think we ended on Dido this time. That's the lesson from the 12 Days of Culture. And this applies to everybody. You always learn when you're talking to a friend. Thank you for being ours.
And that being said, I want to thank you for giving me the best day of culture. We opt up like it's an American Idol finale.
And we rarely stand up by
next to you. What? Woo!